spectrums of political thinking from each of our members. We are a diverse group. I think we are a good segment of the society here, and we all came to respect and have dignity for each other's opinions, and I think we, hopefully, that you'll find that we came up with a good product, and as Wayne says, by all means, please give us your opinions and your thoughts tonight. This is your town hall meeting. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Wayne Ryburn. I've lived here for 25 years. I live in the house that I built in 1981. I have no investments here. I don't own any other property. I don't have any partnership with anybody. So my sole interest here is keeping our community the way most of us want it. And I'm impressed with this committee that I've been on here for 4 months. Having worked with governing and advisory boards for 10 years, this is the most transparent group I've ever been with. Nobody's coming in with these hidden agendas or trying to dominate other people with their ideas. So I'm very pleased to be here. And as Ron said, please ask anything that you're not clear about. We want to do that this evening. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, I too would like to welcome you. I am Gail Robinette. We do appreciate your time. It's wonderful to see this kind of turnout. We need the dialogue. We need the input. I think, again, I can only echo what they're saying, that we have together, I believe, worked very hard to accomplish some things that in the beginning may have looked almost like the impossible dream. But I think we have some things to share with you, and we need to hear you, and we think some things, in fact, are possible. I have owned a home here since 1977. I've lived here full-time over the last 4 years. I worked in education for 36 years. I have a professional consulting group now. I work with schools throughout the state with the State Department of Education that are schools that are currently in state sanctions and have the privilege of working with those fine people in those schools to turn around their achievement performance. I'm on the Parks, Recreation, and Open Space Commission, and I also have been very involved in the Cambria Land Conservancy, a group that's kind of has the tree farm, just volunteers that have been raising the trees, the Monterey pines, and restoring the forest, particularly with the big volunteer once a year planting on the Fiscalini Ranch. And so it's a pleasure to have you here this evening and to be a part of this community.
Hi. I can't tell which is there. Oh, my. I'm Wayne Atto. I've been involved in environmental causes here in the area for the last 8 or 9 years, mostly through Green Space, the Cambria Land Trust, where I've been on the board for 9 years and I've been president for 8 years. However, my involvement in the committee is as an individual, and I'm very happy to have worked with this group of people. I'm very pleased with the product that we came up with. I've been appreciative of the questions that a number of people have raised about aspects of the program, and we have developed a question and answer list that you all have that was updated most recently this afternoon, and we will continue to update that as questions are asked and questions that we didn't anticipate and that we feel it's important to answer.
Hi, I'm Bill Allen, and I hit Cambria 30 years ago. I came up here to meet friends from Northern California. This was halfway in between. Came up here and spent a weekend, and about an hour before we left town here, was driving around, saw a lot for sale by the owner, and half an hour later it belonged to me, and I went home wondering whether he had robbed me or I'd stolen from him. But it turned out to be one of the smartest dumb things I ever did. A couple of years later, I bought a little weekend house, and Then in 1985, I built a new home and moved up here full-time. And since I've been here, I've been involved in quite a few things. And I was chairman of the North Coast Advisory Council for several years back in the 90s. And we started talking then about a lot reduction program, some kind of a program where we could hopefully
conservation interest here. I am employed by the Land Conservancy of San Luis Obispo County. As some of you may know, the Land Conservancy of San Luis Obispo County was actually incorporated in 1984 to purchase lots in Camarillo to protect Monterey pines. And over those years, we've acquired over 250 lots in Cambria, and I've been managing the program since 2001 and been involved in perhaps about 60 lot acquisitions here, so I bring a lot of experience in that respect. However, prior to my tenure with the Land Conservancy, I have a background in finance, doing construction loans and commercial mortgages, so I also understand the business sides of things and the construction sides of things. And in between those two events, I earned a master's degree in city and regional planning at Cal Poly. So I think it was for those reasons that I was asked to participate in this group. And I want to say thanks again for coming out. I think that what we have here is participatory decision-making in the works, and I'm pleased to see it. Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Jeanette Johnson. I'm a real estate broker in Cambria. I've been licensed since 1971 and have been a Cambria resident and property owner since 1986. So we've been here for 20 years. Coming into this committee, it seemed like there were so many challenges ahead, and we just took one at a time and worked through it. It's been amazing to me to see how, if you work long enough on something, how it can be resolved. And I've had the opportunity to just give input and information on kind of reactions and questions that we get from property owners and just providing information to the committee. And it's been a privilege, and I'm thankful that all of you are here and hope that this will be a very upbeat and accomplished a lot in this meeting. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, and my name is Wayne Perrick. I'm probably the newbie on this group. I've only been around Cambria for about 5 years. Ann and I, however, have owned a lot on Happy Hill for approximately 10 years, and we've been very active and interested in build-out reduction and the lot retirement program for some time, and have participated in a lot of meetings and settings in which that topic has been discussed. It's a passion. It's something I feel very strongly about, and something that certainly everyone on this committee is committed to doing. The one person who's not with us today, John Linder, had a medical situation that he had to tend to, and so he won't be able to be with us tonight. But as you can see from the introductions of this very fine group, I am so proud of this team and proud of the work that they've done. All of the documentation and information that you have has come from each of these individuals, the ideas, the input, a lot of hard work, a lot of juggling sometimes to keep all of the documents in sync with one another, as you might guess, Q&A, main report, PowerPoint presentation, etc. But everyone, again, has done just an exceptional job. And as I said at the last meeting, if anyone ever asked me to work on a committee again, and it had any one of these individuals, count me in, because they're terrific. I think we have our sponsors here who help sponsor our committee from the CCSD board, Ms. Joan Coben and Greg Sanders. Could you stand? Yeah. And there's Joan. And is Don with us? Okay, Don will be coming. And are there any other directors here to acknowledge? No? With that, I'm going to turn it over.
There's chairs over here.
Yes, for those of you who would like a seat, there's some additional chairs back here, so please be comfortable. Again, we want to be informal here. It could be a long meeting, so please feel free.
The Q&A left a long time ago. I don't know if I'm going to have to go back.
Okay. I'm just informed that we have run out of many of our handouts. All of the information that some of you have is available on the website, which is thecambriacsd.org, and actually in the PowerPoint presentation that we'll be doing. I think one of the PowerPoint slides has some information about that as well. But again, all of this information is on the website. And again, we'll be talking about this later, but this is a living document. It changes literally daily, as Wayne Atto just said. And we try to keep it current, and we try also to get that current information to you via the website. With that, I'd like Ms. Tammy Ruddick to introduce her team.
Okay, thank you. First, I wanted to acknowledge that we have district staff here who are here in a support position and capacity. Joy with RBF Consulting. Roger is with Nadelson Dale Company. They have worked very closely with this committee as well in providing financial information and doing the number crunching and working over these past few months with them. Did I forget anybody in the audience who is involved with the district? We do have Ann Bowie. She's going to be embarrassed that I'm introducing her. She's sitting here behind. She is with Black & Veatch, and she is here so that she can get a head start on the financial management plan, or as we've called it, the rate study, but we decided today it will be our long-term financial management plan to try to gain a better understanding of this program and others and the community's input. Okay, thank you. Oh, I was going to mention about the sheets, the comment sheets. They're on the table over there, so if you have questions or comments that you want to approach the podium anytime during the presentation, feel free to fill out one of those sheets and get them over here. You can either find a staff member, and that staff member will walk them over here to our district clerk, who will get them together and get them to the committee so that your questions can be answered. If you want to make comments, feel free to fill out that sheet as well so that you have an opportunity to approach the podium. There will be a 3-minute limitation per question or per comment, but certainly you're welcome to make as many as you want, and we'll try to get to as many questions as we can tonight. And we appreciate your being here. Thank you.
And again, for those of you who are standing, there's a few chairs up front here. Again, there's some chairs standing back there that can be made into chairs. So again, everyone, we want you to feel comfortable. So please feel free to join in the audience. We have a PowerPoint presentation that we'd like to make to give you a little bit of background. And then after we've gone through that, certainly we'd like to open it up to questions, comments, and get your input. So why don't we start off with the PowerPoint? So why don't we go to the first slide, which is really the purpose of build-out reduction. Why are we doing this? Certainly to maintain Cambria's quality of life and to protect the Cambria forest and open space. But it's also water conservation measure. It's a very serious water conservation measure. It limits the growth-inducing impact of the desalination project that's under consideration, and it preserves a balance between potential growth and the sustained availability of public services. There are also some very legal and regulatory issues that are key to the program. And I'm going to put Art Montandon, if I could, briefly on the spot here, to just discuss those points and give a little more background again as to why we're trying to reduce build out.
Thank you. Can you hear me, Wayne?
No.
This thing is tied with something. Does it even work?
Yeah.
It is. I'll try leaning over. Can you? No? No. Yeah, they don't trust me that I'm going to take it. That's if you've been a lawyer as long as I have, you get used to this type of stuff. But but anyway, this the build-out reduction type of program, sometimes called lot reduction, has been considered a
At least I can stand up a little. Thank you. Oh, good. I feel more trusted now. But this isn't just to draw attention to myself. But that concept has been discussed in many documents and many conversations over many years in Cambria, and it's brought to you here today not only in concept, it's brought to you in a manner to demonstrate that it is in fact possible. It is. We haven't spent the many hours and the many months and the many dollars it took to get to this point because this is something we just wanted to do. It is actually a piece, possibly one of the most important pieces, of the water planning for the district for the future. That plan, which is in process now, will require an environmental impact report, as everything we do does. And this document has to analyze the impacts of the water planning for Cambria to the community and to the environment. One of the mandatory requirements of that type of environmental analysis is to look at the growth-inducing impacts of providing supplemental water to the citizens of Cambria. We are obligated because of the moratorium, so it's more than just something that we adopt today or look at today and decide. It's something that will remain in place and change Cambria for many years to come. The numbers, as you'll find out, and many of the concepts in this report were taken from other documents that exist in the planning area of Cambria with the Coastal Commission and with the county regional plan. So those recommendations on numbers and how we should do things have been followed in this document also. We haven't, in other words, made the whole thing up. We have tried to coordinate with the other planning efforts within this particular area. The major component that has to do with the feasibility of this particular document is the funding and whether we could equitably and legally obtain funds to fund the program. The program in and of itself, I mean, people have called me and talked to me on the streets and sent me emails stating this is a growth control program, but it's really not. In concept and in legal terms, it's to reduce the need for future water. And that is something within our scope of responsibility. Since we're a water agency, we have to look to the future and determine whether we can fulfill those needs and to reduce those needs and conserve water where appropriate. So this document hopefully accomplishes all that and more. And as the chairman has pointed out, and we have responded to many emails, it's a complex document because it involves so much information from different agencies. And we stand ready to respond to any of your questions now and later. And feel free to contact us and the other board members. Hopefully I can speak for you. And we stand ready as staff to answer any other questions you may have regarding this and from now until it's adopted.
Thank you, Art. And I assume we'll probably have a question or two for Art towards the end of the meeting as well. While we're on this slide of goals and of build-out reduction, they include certainly retiring and the merging of enough building sites to match the 4,650 existing and outstanding residential water connections. They also include meeting a Coastal Commission recommendation made during a 2001 periodic review of the San Luis Obispo County Local Coastal Program, and to coordinate with the county's environmental impact report on the county, on the Cambria and San Simeon Acres community plans of the North Coast Area Plan and CCSD Water Master Plan Program EIR to determine the funding sources and an equitable distribution of the costs for build-out reduction. Next slide, please. Some of the outcomes of build-out reduction are 3,357 undeveloped lots preserved in perpetuity. That represents about 28% of all lots in Cambria, a Cambria that's still in the pines. I know all of you out there know what that means and how that feels. A community that retains the qualities that residents and visitors appreciate, enhanced property values, and the resolution of future and longstanding planning and water shortage problems. Next slide, please. We wanted to show in a pie chart the residential lots with build-out reduction and demonstrate or the currently built lots versus future connections versus in the green lots that will remain as open space. And again, as you recall from the previous slide, that represents about 28% of the lots preserved for open space. Next slide, please. If we contrast that with doing nothing, as in we do not have a lot retirement program and building continues unmitigated, then you get this kind of a picture with very little open space preserved. Next slide, please. So as we look at the contrast, obviously our vision is the pie chart on the right with build-out reduction in place and a healthy balance of open space. Next slide, please. So one of the things that we've been studying and looking long and hard at is this program feasible? And the answer is yes. We believe it to be very economically feasible. And in just a few slides, actually, we're going to demonstrate that and share those numbers with you. But in the reports, there are a lot of definitions of and terms that you'll hear, and we probably need to spend just a little bit of time talking about them. So next slide. First of all, you hear us talk a lot about lots. A lot is a legal unit of property that can be conveyed to another owner. It may or may not be a building site, and we'll touch on that in the next slide. And let's talk about an assessor parts. A lot merger has taken place. You still have one lot, but that may be a larger lot than 25 by 70. And in the current inventory of lots that we'll see on just another slide, you'll see the actual lot count. Some of you may ask, is that the actual lot count of 25 by 70s? No, it's the actual lot count, most of which are 25 by 70. Some could be larger. Okay? Next slide, please. Retired lot is legally restricted from attaining any future water entitlement. And there are a number of means for retiring lots. Conservation and open space easements, a merger with other lots, zoning and water use restrictions prohibiting construction or availability of water. Next slide, please. This is a pictorial highlighting the residential built lots, which I think show up pretty much as yellow, versus the vacant lots, which show up more as an orange. And next slide, please. You'll also hear some discussion about special projects areas, 1 and 2, and some have asked where those special projects areas are located. The special project area 1 is in orange. Special project area 2 is in green and does not include the Highway 1 sign, by the way. Next slide, please. So some facts and numbers. There is a lot of information that certainly each of us had to digest and understand in trying to understand, again, the costs of this program and certainly the financial options or financing options for this program. There are 11,923 total existing lots, and all of you are now experts on lots. Are those, again, 25 by 70? Well, again, most of them are, but not all. 6,838 developed lots, 5,085 vacant lots. And then we'd like to take the number 3,786, which represents the current residential water connections, add to that 6 pending connections, 31 outstanding intent to serve letters, 42 grandfathered meters, 701 existing CCSD waitlist positions, 84 potential other CCSD water positions, brings you to a total of 4,650. Now, those of you around this community see that 701 and say, wait a minute, what's that about? I thought it was 666. It's 666 single-family positions, but that also add to that 35 multifamily connections. So that's why it's 701. But that is your total for 4,650. Next slide. I promised you that we would talk about the cost, and those of us in the group here and in the team said we really need to get this slide right up front, because everyone who comes to this meeting is going to want to know what the cost is. And I apologize, because it already took a lot more slides than we initially wanted to place it, but we had to do a little bit of preliminary information and definition of terms before we could get here. But right now, given the current funding options that we've considered, and we'll talk about that in another slide, but given the current funding options that we've looked at, the cost to residential water rate increase per month would be approximately $8.81. Commercial water rate increase per month, which is based on an average bill, and I know that's difficult, but it's using the same percentage formula increase that goes against the residential water rate increase, works out to be about $39.40 per month. For a one-time residential build-out reduction fee, which is part of the connection fees for any new construction, would be $10,127. Similarly, for a commercial build-out reduction fee based on a per EDU basis, it would be $10,127. And currently, we're looking at a build-out reduction fee for remodels at $1,000 per remodel. Next slide, please. Now, a lot of you I know have heard of this number, $38,827,800. That's the total program. The ones that we have here, one of the purposes for this meeting is to gather input from all of you as to additional funding sources that we might consider. But the ones that we looked at were an additional fee for water, for new water connections, that was the $8.81 per month. Additional fee for new water connections, that was the $10,127. A special water rate increase, which was the $8.81 per month. An additional fee for remodels, that was the $1,000 per month, as you recall. And then the sale of 65 of the 84 unallocated water connections that fall within that 4,650 cap. Since we made that initial presentation, it's interesting to note that we've had some additional input. At the initial presentation, it was suggested that possibly we could gain some additional revenue from a fee attached to tree removal. And so that's something that certainly when this group convenes that we'll look into. Another idea that has come up is possibly a fee attached to real estate transactions. We're going to look at that. Again, none of these have been studied yet. I'm just saying they're late-breaking news, and so that you understand. And we're going to look at the creation of an infrastructure financing district, which has a lot of potential and could bring in as much as $15 to $20 million. It has obviously some if statements in it, but it's a very good qualified recommendation, and we're going to look into that option as well. So there are a number of funding options that we've presented. There's a number of funding options that we're going to be looking into. You're going to have some funding options for us, I think, at the end of the meeting to take back with us. And all of those will go towards the funding of our program here. Next slide, please. We talked about the unallocated water position and the sale of those positions. Some have asked, well, how does that work? The way that it would work, if we implement that program, is the CCSD would transfer 3 unallocated residential water connections per year to approved land trust. The local land trusts would sell the three water connections, deriving revenue. Proceeds would be used to purchase or retire potential building sites on the open market, and the lots would be retired with deed restrictions or conservation easements, the maintenance of lots, and the monitoring of restrictions would continue, certainly after the retirement. Okay? Next slide, please. Some have asked, what is the criteria for retiring lots? The land trusts would choose lots for purchase or retirement if property is a potential building site. They'd also be interested in a lot that's adjacent to other retired lots to preserve even more contiguous open space. Obviously, cost would be a factor. Lease cost for the greatest benefit. And certainly, the importance for habitat or open space protection would be a consideration. No lot owner would be forced to sell. As we've said on a number of times, it's important to know that the lot owner has a lot of options, some of which we'll discuss in just a few minutes, but one of them is not to sell. Next slide, please. We wanted to demonstrate, because we've shown on a previous slide the amount of money that it would take if the funding options that we've considered to date were in place. And we show that actually in the middle column there. That's the, again, $10,127 one time per EDU, for example, for the build-out reduction fee for lot owners, and the $106 per year. On the rightmost column, you see something that's not quite double for residential water increase, but it goes from $106 per year to $167 per year. And for the build-out reduction fee, it goes from $10,127 to $20,960. We wanted to show this slide because if none of the other options were available, if we could not find, and I failed to mention to this point, we also, of course, will look at grants. We didn't see any immediate grants that we could take advantage of, which is why we did not include it as an immediate funding option. But that doesn't mean we've given up on grants. It just means that we didn't see an immediate retired, owned by conservation groups, or are in the special projects areas, and 1,831 are the lots to be retired or merged. Of that 1,831, 952 lots are retired, as we say, voluntarily. To be clear on that, a lot of those lots are retired through the moving of water connections, or are retired through the current Land Conservancy programs. And that happens over a period of time. That leaves 879 lots that need to be purchased at fair market value. Okay? Next slide, please. Again, using our current funding options, the ones that we've assumed in the report that you're looking at today, approximately 50% of the revenue or input comes from the sale of unallocated water connections. 3% comes from remodel fees, 15% from the water rate increase for residential users, 4% from the water rate increase for commercial users, 23% for the build-out reduction fee for residential, and 5% build-out reduction fee for commercial usage. And that pays for the $38,827,000 program. Next slide, please. The program implementation follows a number of milestones, beginning with the approval of the build-out reduction program. Next step would be to approve and adopt the Water Master Plan Program EIR, adopt Water Master Plan, then incorporate proposed water rate adjustment into water and wastewater rate analysis and modeling study to be performed by Black and Veatch. As funds accumulate, make them available for lot purchases and retirement. Begin transferring meters, 3 a year, to land trust for sale, subject to lifting of the moratorium. Lift the moratorium once the desalination project has made substantial progress and is nearing completion, and then begin offering intent to serve letters to waitlist positions. Next slide, please. The timing of this is following adoption of the water master plan and completion of the water and wastewater rate analysis and modeling study. Portions of the build-out reduction program could be launched as early as spring of 2007. Next slide, please. There's some actions needed to ensure success of the program, beginning with limiting water, wastewater service to building sites within the current CCSD boundaries. Second, to incorporate the build-out reduction program into the EIR for water master plan as a monitored mitigation measure. That's a mouthful, but what it means is that not only do you have to have the plan, but you have to monitor it. You have to keep looking to make sure that these lots, once they're retired, stay retired, and so it has to be monitored, a monitored mitigation measure. Last item, Special Project Area 2 needs to have the same development restrictions as Area 1. Next slide, please. Well, you're all here tonight, so we're at our town hall meeting on May 16th. After that, we've recommended that letters go out to waitlist and lot owners follow this meeting let them know the current status. The CCSD newsletter, website, and billing inserts for ongoing updates. Again, if you look on the CCSD website today, you'll see all of the documentation that you have in front of you, with possibly the exception of the late-making changes to the Q&A that Wayne just finished today. But if I had to guess, I bet those changes will go up pretty quickly. So they're up already. So the website is current, and again, these documents do change. They change probably more than any of us would like them to change, but it's a good thing, because as new funding options change, as assumptions change, things that we thought we could do, you can't do. Things that we didn't think we can do, you can do. So as those assumptions change, we can make changes to the document. And so we will keep that current always on the website. And, of course, press releases for local newspaper coverage. Next slide. So just recapping, and I'm almost done. Everyone's taking a big sigh. Question that we've been wrestling with over the past 3.5 months. And now it's your turn, and we'd like to hear from you, your comments, your suggestions, your criticisms, and certainly any new ideas you may have to make the program better. I'm going to start off by looking at Margot Roberts. Did I get the name pronunciation correct?
Why don't you say who the next one is?
And the next speaker will be Pamela Thompson.
My name is Margot Roberts, and I have been a resident of Cameron for 9 years. I work.
Thank you, Margot. Go ahead. I see a volunteer, Bob Gressens. Would like to take that one?
Okay. I think the question was on just the desalination plant cost, and that's going to be further analyzed as part of our rate study that Black and Veatch is going to be assisting us on. I can say that we've maximized the energy efficiency of what's being designed. The last time we looked at this, the approximate increase was a little bit over 9% to the existing rates. That needs to be updated because The financing assumed that at that time was less than what we think we're going to get now with the federal and state funds that are out there. But the project cost has increased since that time as well. So that's going to be analyzed further in the coming months ahead. So I don't have a specific number that I can get into at this point, but we'd be glad to present that later on. I hope that did that hit your question okay? The maintenance cost of the plant, the last time we looked at it, it was about a little over $700 per acre foot. That's the O&M cost. Now, I know that's an odd term to use, but that's what's in my head. And the current water rate that's being paid to the CCSD right now is over twice that much, just to give you an idea of overall cost. But the rate study has to look at things closer to figure out the exact percent increase that might be involved for operating the plant. The plant also will vary each year depending on the type of rainy season we have the preceding year. So if we have a very wet season like we had this year, it's going to operate for far fewer days than it would during a normal year, which would bring the cost down. So each year the costs are going to vary somewhat depending on weather conditions.
All right, thank you, Ms. Pamela Thompson. And the next speaker will be Will Washburn.
There. Okay, I just want to assure you that the owners of the vacant lots felt the same way when they bought their property. And I think your viewpoint on this program depends upon whether you're one of the takers or one of the taken. As one of the taken, I have a different point of view from the majority of you. My husband's grandfather bought two lots on Lodge Hill in 1932. He couldn't build on them through the Depression. We inherited them early in the 70s, 1970. We came and applied for a permit and were told to wait 4 years. They had a new moratorium. We waited 4 years. We came back and applied again. We're told, sorry, we have a new moratorium for 4 years. As we were aging along with the rest of the population, we managed to find another lot, which was not in the moratorium area, and buy it. We passed that lot, the earlier lot, on to our daughter, who got on the water list. But there's so many restrictions now and expenses that probably, unless she becomes a multimillionaire in the interim, she will never be able to build on it. Also, after we built our house here, the lot next to us became available. And in order to enjoy the open space ourselves and perhaps have a decent investment, and in case we could leave it through our lives without selling it, we could leave it to one of our sons. That would be three lots in town for our three children. Well, now, of course, that doesn't look very likely. This plan, as it is the product of what I have come to think of as the Cambria conspiracy. It is morally, and I believe legally, unacceptable. Water shortage has been the claim since I first. Restrictions that they call tools, but in their toolbox, which I think more accurately would be described as a bag of tricks. They're said by the CCSD to make it possible to impose an absolute cap on building without affecting existing residents at all. The financial plan is to put all the costs on other people, although we're the ones who get to have the vacant lots. Now, I have this vacant lot still, and if you want to do a conservation easement on it, I think that I'd be willing to if everyone else in town who's a resident also donates a lot for open space so that the ones who take over these lots and enjoy them help pay for them. The hope as it is that faced with permanent annual costs of fire protection, liability insurance, and property tax, the owners of the unbuildable lots will give up and turn their lots over to CCSD for whatever tax deduction the IRS may allow them. There is a program for open space in the state of Virginia that's described as very effective. It's totally voluntary, and it involves an IRS credit which can be transferred, and it seems to be doing rather well. So you might want to look into that as a possibility. I believe that either one of these might work. I don't think your present plan will, because I think it's essentially the same approach as Lucas versus South Carolina Coastal Council, which was decided in 1992. Thank you.
My name is Will Washburn, and I live in San Maria.
I'm sorry. Just before you begin, I just wanted to prepare the next speaker, Bill Warren, to come up.
But we need to respond
if we could to Ms. Thompson. And I'm going to I'd like to start just briefly, and then of course anyone on the team here can speak to that too. But one of the points, and I know sometimes when we present options, these are not the options that everyone wants to hear, but nonetheless, I did want to respond with the options for those that are not on the current water wait list, because that's not really in our presentation. There are still a number of options, and I respectfully understand that it may not be the options that you want to hear, but they are, one, to acquire and move a meter from another lot, and I know that has costs associated with it, to purchase an unallocated water connection from a land trust, which is in our current plan, to simply retain the property, do nothing, to sell their property, donate their property, merge their property with an adjacent parcel. So again, there are some options available, and I just wanted to point those out. And again, anyone on my team here who wants to add to that.
May I respond to that? I think it's
yes.
Sort of like saying, we're going to kill you, but you're free to
choose. I understand. Thank you for your comments. All right.
You made quite a number of points. Then, if you would give them to us in writing, we can respond sometime. But the limit of 4,650 lots was not from this committee. It's been approved by the county Board of Supervisors, as well as the CCSD. And if you look at the number of lots that are already built upon and the ones that are on the wait list and the others that are pending, there simply aren't that many more water connections available. And what we're trying to do in this is identify some of the routes that that lot owners can take.
Thank you. Now, Mr. Washburn, I'm sorry. It's your turn, and then to be followed by Bill Warren.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Yes, hi. My name is Will Washburn. I live in Santa Maria. In order to understand the legal options available to the, for the BRP financial plan, it is necessary to have a review of some of the past history about the CCSD water wait list. Title 26, Growth Management, Code 26.01.070, Construction Permit Procedures, describes the limits imposed on the CCSD by county. Specifically, the 1990 modification to this code relates to how new water connections can be added to the existing of adding 65 new water connects, which was presented at the last CCSD meeting, and you just talked about it now, is not a legal option. We need another financial plan for making the BRP a success. Without taking a proactive position on this problem, CCSD is avoiding their responsibility as good stewards of the public trust and of public monies. Like so many living here in Cambria, I have paid taxes in support of CCSD for almost 30 years. We expect CCSD to provide better management of these monies and not to pursue an option that is clearly a violation of county code. So the one question I have is, If CCSD still believes that the recommended option is the way to go to add those new connects, then why don't they approach county right now so they can get the code modified so they can do it legally? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Washburn. Art, would you take that?
I'd like to first respond to the previous question, which talked about whether this program takes property, and specifically the property in Cambria, which has no water entitlement, no water meter, not on the wait list. The first part of that analysis is to look at what those individuals own today. They own a lot that if the wait list we currently have is exhausted under current law, that they possibly could get an entitlement sometime in the future. Our estimate, based on what the growth management ordinance has done in operation over the past few years, is that will be in about 26 to 27 years. That assumes that DSAL is, in fact, permitted and constructed in the time frame we hope that it will be done. So given that possibility, their hope for water is fairly remote and something that will be decided, frankly, in the future. So we looked at what this program would do to those property owners, and in my opinion, it does very little, if anything. The people are still in the same position to get water today or the next 20 or 30 years. They would have to purchase an entitlement somewhere else to be able to construct in that time frame. At the end of that time, what we have into this program is additional water connections that we won't determine in this approval what will happen, because what will happen today could be changed by future boards as far as how those water positions will be allocated, whether the county ordinance will remain the same. So whatever we do today can be undone 30 years from now. That's kind of the problem we'd be faced with. Mr. Washburn and I have had a good back and forth question and answer interplay on the internet for the last couple of days, and he's brought up whether the county ordinance is in fact violated by the district's plan. In my opinion, it is not. If the county chooses to say that it is, they certainly can amend this program, their ordinance. The ordinance that he's referring to is specific to Cambria already. It was adopted and amended recently because of the moratorium. But in my opinion, it doesn't violate the county ordinance, because what we have in our ordinance, because the county ordinance says that we have to comply with our ordinance and transfers. Our ordinance on transfers include a provision that we can designate three water entitlements a year for district purposes. That's been in our ordinance for a long time, and that's part of this planning process. Those particular entitlements will be the ones that will be transferred to the land trusts and, in fact, sold to fund this program.
Thank you, Art. Mr. Bill Warren, followed by Steve Brody.
Good evening. My name is Bill Warren. I'm a Cambrian resident. My wife and I have lived here for a long, long time. Betty Fiscalini is unable to be here and speak in support of the build-out reduction program. She has asked me to share her thoughts. In 1981, local ranchers submitted a plan to the CCSD to share water in anticipation of Cambria's growth. This proposal received no CCSD support at that time. Today, our water master plan contains a desalination plant as a supplemental water supply for current residents and over 650 lot owners on your water wait list. The water master plan also contains a proposed build-out reduction program designed to mitigate the growth inducing impacts of the new water source. It has taken 25 years to develop this plan. I urge you to support its build-out reduction program being discussed this evening. Betty Fiscalini. My personal opinion is this build-out reduction program is our best option, and I think it helps guarantee the kind of quality of life we all want. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill, and thank you, Ms. Fiscal.
And this plan seems to be a very reasonable balance between preserving space, compensating people for their property, guaranteeing the quality of life that many of us moved here for, So I think it's a great plan. I'm really behind it. So thanks a lot.
Thank you, Mr. Brody. Mr. Jerry McKinnon, followed by Mr. Darrell Robinson.
Members of the committee, I feel like a kind of an old Laurel and Hardy movie. This is a fine kettle of fish you got us into this time, Stanley. I guess I'm the only one around who disapproves of the entire thing of stopping development of lots. To me, it is an exercise in eminent domain. We have seen eminent domain in practice in the East, where they built boat slips, they built shopping centers, they do all of these kinds of things for the good of the public. Well, now what are we doing here today? We're not going to allow these people to fulfill their dreams on the lots that they purchased, so that we, in this almost gated community, can enjoy, can take away from them the dreams that they had when they purchased their lots. Now, I'm suggesting this. What are we teaching our children? We're saying, my children, I did this for you. After I'm gone, you can continue to enjoy what I deprived others from enjoying. Let this be my legacy to you as you go through life. Take what you can without concern for others so far as you can do it legally. And that seems to me is what we're doing here. We're not allowing people. Can you imagine? There's some realtors in the office or in the building here. A couple walks in, they want to live in Cambria, they lay down their hard-earned cash, they're told, well, you can't build for 10 or 15 years, and they say, that's okay, when we retire, we're going to come up here and build our dream house. And now look what you're doing. That's very sad, very, very sad. Now, I drove through the, what do you call that place down, Marine Terrace? Where are the trees in Marine Terrace that we're protecting? Most of the trees in Marine Terrace are already on occupied lots. The trees that are not on occupied lots, a very high percentage of them are dead. The other trees that you see on Park Hill fall into the same category. You'll find a few over there. You'll find a grove here and there. But the majority of the trees in those groves are dead. So what trees are we talking about saving? Well, of course, we've already designated Project Area 1 and Project Area 2, a lot of trees there, and that's what has been decided by somebody. Now, the limits on infrastructure. Do you realize that the hospital district is going to impose a tax on us if we approve it to vote? Just so that they can go out and hire additional ambulance people who cannot afford to live in Cambria at the present time? That's a part of the infrastructure. And here I read in your paper where you want to protect the property values. Okay, my friends, protect the property values, but see what you can do when your time comes and there ain't no ambulance to take you to the hospital. Think about the unintended consequences of your actions.
Thank you, Mr.
It's just not good. Thank you.
Thank you for your... Thank you for your comments. Just one second, Mr. Robinson. Is there any response? Mr. McKinnon? No, thank you for your... Mr. Robinson, followed by Mr. Norm Fleming.
Hi, I'm Darrell Robinson, and I'm here as president of United Lot Owners of Cambria. First, I would like to thank your committee, the directors, the staff, and the consultants for all the work you've put into this project so far. Understanding that we're in the 25th year of this project, I think being here tonight, everybody's come a long ways. clearly, there's ways to go yet. There's some wrinkles that need to be worked out. And I will acknowledge that there is some debate amongst the members of UNLOC over some of the aspects of this plan. But the leadership of UNLOC is very much in support of the concept that's being worked on here, and I would like to be able to look over some of the details of how the financing works. But we think that you're on the right track, And key to that is the fact that you're recognizing the investment and the value of the lots that you're planning on not allowing to be built. And you're trying to raise money to be able to treat people fairly, even though you may not give them a building permit. So, again, I express support, and thank you for your work, and we'll keep supporting you as you move forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Robinson. Mr. Fleming, followed by Mr. Marjorie Ott.
Again, I'd like to thank the speakers for their definitive program. I'm sure most of us got the intent and the details. I'm not inclined to approve or support large expenditures of money by the CCSD. However, in this case, I think it's a worthwhile project. There's more at stake than saving water. There's the infrastructure that needs to be kept at a limit. I'm thinking of a major disaster such as, well, we're too high up for a tsunami, but we're right next to large groves of half-dead trees, and there could be a tremendous forest fire. I'd like to know how to get out of here. I don't want to see all the congestion that unrestricted development might bring. I'd like to know where the exit routes are. And I hope there's more availability of government grants to support this program. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fleming. Journey. Okay. All right. I apologize. Ms. Marjorie Ott, followed by a written comment.
Thank you. Marjorie Ott. And I am supportive of the project. My concern was reading in the newspaper that you were considering a steeper rate increase for the lodging establishments. And I can see it, I understand the differential between residential and commercial and supportive of that, but I think commercial, all commercial rates should be the same. When visitors come to Cambria, they use water at more than just the lodging establishments. And in fact, when residents have guests, they use more water. And so it shouldn't fall on one industry to pay a greater, a higher rate. And so I would urge you to consider keeping the commercial rate the same, no matter what the business is. Thank you.
Thank you. And
Pardon?
Good. I just don't think somebody
Well, unfortunately, I didn't see the article you're referring to, but my committee members, correct me if I'm wrong, but we have not suggested there'd be a distinction in the rates among commercial
users. It was in the
users.
Cambrian.
What can I say?
Okay, so that's right. It's false. Cool.
Don't read everything you read in the paper.
Don't believe it.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for your comment. I have a written question here. Which is, why do the future residents pay more dollars than the current residences and receive less benefits? Would anyone like to take that one? So I'll read it again. Why do the current residents, or why do the future residents pay more dollars than the current residences and receive fewer benefits?
Did they put their name down? Okay.
They did not.
I'm making the assumption that they're speaking directly toward the connection fee and then having to pay the customer billing fee. So those are folks who are not current customers, and many of you all had to pay a connection fee when you came and you built your home and or you tore down your home and built a new one. So the new customers would have to pay that same or now this part of a build-out reduction fee, and they would be a billing customer at that point. So I hope that answers the question.
All right.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
I think part of the answer is that everyone will be paying the same water rate at the end once they connect to the system. So the only additional cost, as the general manager pointed out, would be the connection fee, which is, if I remember the number correctly, it's around $11,000. Connection fees traditionally is the buy-in to the infrastructure system that the others have been paying for with their rates for many, many years. So it's the concept is you're buying into the structure for that is already in place, the retire lots for the pipe delivery system, for the money already, millions of dollars already spent on desalinization to get it to this point, and other water master plan projects. So in concept, they're paying some more, but it's the traditional way of gaining money in every water jurisdiction that I know of. The connect fee here in Cambria right now is very, very low. I think for water, it's $5,000. $5,500. I worked for jurisdictions where it was $25,000. So it is the whole concept of looking at the rates and connection fees in conjunction with this program is to come up with an equitable rate similar to what's charged in other jurisdictions that are like Cambria or nearby Cambria. So what we're doing is not a punishment. It's getting in conformance with what the practice has been and is in California throughout all the water districts that I'm familiar with.
There's another written question. It's actually two questions. The first question is, where did the 84 unallocated water meters come from? And the second question is, how much new commercial water will be available? I'll take an initial stab at this and then turn it over to my committee members. Where did the 84 unallocated water connections come from? Remember when we did the slide projection, we talked about there are 3,786 current residential water connections. To that, there are 6 pending connections, 31 outstanding intent to serve letters, 42 grandfathered meters, 701, that was that number that was 666 plus 35 multifamily meters that are on the existing waitlist position. If you add those numbers up, it is 84 shy of the 4,650. So that is where the 84 unallocated water connections came from. And question two, how much new commercial water will be available? And it's my understanding that commercial water is made available on approximately 20% of the allocation of residential water. But again, I will turn this over to my committee here for some further comments.
I believe that's right.
Mr. Chairman, I can answer that. The practice here in Cambria has been that 20% of the water allocated each year goes to commercial. So, for example, if 10 water connections are allocated for the year, two of them are designated for commercial, you can pretty much do the math based on the number you have in the report, how much commercial that will be. The number you put on the board, I think it's 701, is the combined single-family residential and multifamily residential on the list. And a 20% of that, if you add to it, would be approximately the commercial that would be available. Traditionally, not all the commercials used right away, and it follows the marketplace, but that would be, at the end of the day, the amount of water that's planned and built into the desalinization plant to serve commercial.
Thank you, Mr. Montandon. I have a written question, and I hope I have the pronunciation here, Mr. Jim Crescenzi, and if there's any additional follow-up, please feel free to come to the microphone. But the written question is there a contingency plan for the possibility that the desal plant will not be approved? I see a lot of people looking at one another, and I'm looking for someone to take the answer, take the question. Everyone's pointing at Bob and Art.
Not all these are legal questions, yeah. But we get a consensus, and so part of the process of developing the water master plan that has already taken place is the public hearings to hear potential alternatives to the desalinization plant. Part of the process of analyzing the water master plan and part of the EIR process requires that we look at alternatives. Preliminary analysis of these alternatives we have reached a conclusion, the board has reached a conclusion that the other supplemental water is very costly and could could involve much more environmental damage than the desalinization plant. So if desalinization, for whatever reason, is not approved, and as you, many of you know, we have grant funding for that also, so it's the least expensive, then what we'd be looking at is the other alternatives, which frankly would be quite expensive and quite costly to the environment. But that's what we'll be left with, and we'll have to formulate a plan and funding to attempt the next available alternative.
Thank you. Mr. Wayne Myburn?
Some of you may recall that 2 weeks ago in the Cambrian, Director Shaldicott had a letter addressing this, and he historically went back and looked at all the options for water that were reviewed probably in the last at least 15 years, resulting in desal being the best choice. So I would hate to think what would happen if desal fell through for lack of funding or environmental concerns, to have to go back and review that list and come up with the best alternative. So we'll hope that that won't happen. Thank you.
Thank you. Sorry about that. I know the expert opinion that we need from the next question, but we have a question. Mr. Richard Holly has asked to speak.
My name is Richard Holly. I'm a resident of Cambria and also the executive director of Green Space, the Cambria Land Trust. I've got a couple of questions, but first of all, I think this is a bold and innovative approach, and I know there's some issues to be worked out, and I have a few questions on my own as a private resident. I was wondering if low-cost housing is exempt from the building reduction plan, and if so, why, and how many additional meters might that increase over the 4650 if the answer is yes? And as part of the building reduction plan, why isn't the Cambria Forest Management Plan part of that plan, since we're going to be acquiring a lot of forest? We need to have a management plan with it to address some of the issues that some of the property owners have already expressed. And with the 84 unallocated units, this may have been answered, and I apologize if it hasn't. When you subtract 65 from the 84, there's 19 left. And what happens to those meters? And then lastly, there's some confusion on what the population will be in Cambria if 4650 actually happens. I know we've heard a lot of numbers battered around. One of them is that there's only 1.8 people living per household. Another is people say there's 2.3. And I've heard as high as 3.5. And when you times that by 4,650, it means quite a different thing. We could be looking at 14,000 or 9,000 people. So what is the right number? That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Holly. You have a number of questions. I'm going to take the last one first and then ask my team here to respond to some of the other very good questions. With regards to the population, you're exactly right. It can be certainly all over the board depending on which numbers, if you will, you're looking at. I believe Cambria historically has been around the 1.0. In fact, I think I've even heard as few as 1.61, but certainly the 1.8 number is in there per household. I think the national average that I understand, or possibly it's the state average, is about 2.3. And then, of course, depending on which number you use to multiply times 4,650, it can change the population drastically. And that's one of the reasons that we talked about or initially decided to focus on connections as opposed to trying to get our arms around the population, because it was so difficult to pin down which assumption you were going to use with regards to population, whereas the number of connections were more concrete. Are there other comments?
On the difference between the 65 connections that we're proposing to make available to sell and the 84 that are unallocated, the 19, what would happen to those 19, if it's, I understand, would be determined at the end of the build-out program in 22 years. But perhaps somebody else wants to weigh in on that.
I'm going to let Art answer that, but I was going to answer his question with regard to the forest management plan and how it could be incorporated. It's a really good point. In fact, I think it got brought up today in the office that it could be a good guideline and a good tool to use for administering the program. You saw the administration costs, the weed abatement, and we're going to need some help and some guidelines. I think it was the chief and I. Somebody and I were talking about it either today or yesterday, so that was a very good point that Rick brought up.
And I can respond to the affordable housing question. Our effort as a water agency is not to necessarily push and require affordable housing. That's a function of the zoning authority, which is the county here. We have talked with the county on how to supply water to those units that they encourage. And those units, as residential units, will be part of the residential totals. What happens today is, I think we're dealing with people, self-help housing and Habitat for Humanity, that they can come in and get, they have come in and gotten allocations for residential water, one multifamily and the other agency, single-family residential, and they're deemed affordable housing under the zoning law, but for our purposes, they're a single-family connection or a multifamily connection. So when they come in the door and ask for allocations to build this particular project, they would be given the same as they would if they're a single-family or multifamily project. So they're built into the numbers. I can speak briefly about the 19 meters left. We are continuing to look at the way we calculate and subtract the number of services we have here today. It would sound like an easy task, but it has not been. And as the committee knows, these numbers have changed as we've looked at things and refined them. But the current calculations, there'll be 19 meters or services left at the end of the 22-year period, but if you add the cost and time of putting desal together, it would be probably 26 years. And whether those will be allocated by the boards of supervisors or the district board at that time or sometime right before then. So those are left in anticipation of those wait lists for people waiting at that time.
I might also comment, and thank you, Dick Hawley, for commenting that our approach is a bold approach. It's my understanding is that there's no other community in the United States that are doing what we're doing right now. And so it's cutting-edge technology, it's by the seat of our pants, and it's you're all involved in this, and you should all be proud that we're trying to do something to maintain the quality of life that we have in our small village. So it certainly is a bold approach, Dick, and let's all get on board and go with it, because I think it's really going to be beneficial for all of us. Thanks.
Thank you, Ron. Mr. Dan Bailf has asked a question. Could you please explain how you arrived at the 952-879 split on the 1,831 lots that are to be retired? And I've asked Mr. Roger Dale to speak to this question. By the way, for those who don't know, Roger participated in just about every one of our meetings, oftentimes over the telephone and remotely, but has been really helpful educating most of us, certainly initially, on the lot retirement program and all of the numbers that go with it.
Okay, thank you for the question. Kind of back up a little bit, this is really a process of reduction or elimination, and I'll kind of walk through a few of the steps that got us to the numbers that the question asked about. We calculated that in order to achieve the goal of capping development at 4,650 residential units, that there are a total of 3,357 lots in the district that would need to remain undeveloped. Now, some of those are already retired or are already owned by a conservation group that we assumed wouldn't be developing them. And then there are also a number of lots that are in the special project areas that were assumed to be undeveloped. So if you deduct out those categories that I just mentioned, it gets us down from the 3,357 to a total of 1,831 lots that would be retired or merged. And that's the number that the question asked about. From that total, we estimated that 952 lots could be retired voluntarily, and I'll come back to that in a minute. And if you deduct that from the 1831, that gets us to the 879 that would need to be purchased. Now, the 952 is a projection based on different assumptions that we made about existing programs that could be continued to encourage voluntary lot retirements. And some of those include, as Wayne Perrick mentioned earlier, lots that are retired when water meters or water positions are transferred from one location to another. There are also situations where an existing developed lot has, let's say, a house on it, and then an extra lot that the same owner has next to it that for all practical purposes is part of their property but is technically a separate lot. And in many instances, those owners would find it advantageous for tax purposes as well as just practical reasons to have additional yard space or open space to formally merge that with their property and take it out of circulation for development. So based on those assumptions, we came up with the 952. Now, you may ask, what happens if those assumptions aren't correct? Then the other number, the 879, would go up or down. We believe that we've been conservative or cautious in the way we've estimated the 952. In other words, we haven't been overly aggressive or unrealistic about assuming how many lots would be voluntarily retired. We basically looked at what historic patterns and trends have been and continued those based on the situations that would be out there for the remaining lots. So if anything, I would suspect that that number would go up, which means that the 879 would go down somewhat, which would then reduce the cost of the program. So we've tried in all cases where there's been uncertainty and we needed to make assumptions to err on the side of being cautious, and by that I mean overestimate the potential cost of the program. Thanks.
Thank you, Roger. I have a question from Mahela Burton, and the question is a written question. It says, how many existing commercial connections are there? How many future connections? And I'm assuming we're still talking commercial. And then the question is, how can a desal plant size be determined unless all commercial connections are ascertained and then capped? All water in Cambria will come from the same source. Build-out reduction should include all water meters. I'm going to ask Mr. Montandon to speak to that, or Mr. Gressens, regarding the existing commercial connections, but I can help a little bit with the future connections. Of the future connections for commercial, again, that 20% number comes up. So as future future connections for residential, thank you, as future residential connections are made available, 20% of that number is made available for commercial connections. But as far as the existing numbers, I would have to turn to my experts for that.
You know, I'm going to answer the question about the existing commercial customers, and then Bob Gressens, our district engineer, is going to talk about the 20% for commercial in case people don't understand that. There's just a little over 200 existing customer commercials and commercial accounts in Cambria. I don't have the exact number, but I want to say it's about 210 or 217. It doesn't fluctuate much unless somebody sells. That might be how it changes, but there, right now that's the current customer balance. Bob? Up to 20%?
For planning purposes, we've set aside 20% as a minimum for the visitors serving commercial retail uses, and that's in accordance with our California Coastal Commission permit. that was issued some time back to the district, and that's to encourage the visitor access to the coast in accordance with the Coastal Act. So that's what we have in our planning numbers, not to have any less than 20% set aside for that use.
All right, thank you. And before you get too comfortable turning that microphone off, I have one that I think is going to come right back to you, and it comes from Mr. Art Van Rijn. It's, will water be delivered to San Simeon as part of the program?
At this point, no.
I also checked. I wanted to talk. That might surprise somebody. How do you mean not at this moment? I thought that was off the table, or...
You know, the ball was in their court is the last that we heard about a year and a half ago when we met with their ad hoc committee, and I have heard nothing since then. So that's why I say at this point, and we are not designing the plant to include San Simeon.
What if they suddenly decide they want to do it, you don't have enough water?
You know, they're probably going to be on their own at this point, Art.
Okay. That sounds good to me. Now, the reason I wanted to talk is that I'm so pleased with this committee. I think this is the first committee I've seen in 20 years, 15 years, that wasn't a thinly disguised railroad job for something else. I think what you've got is true input here, and I think your program is great. I understand Pamela's upset. She's afraid that she's going to get screwed, or somebody's going to get screwed because they are not going to get what their lot is worth. I'm hoping you've got that covered, because nobody should get screwed. I'm an old warrior in the battle, in the water battles around here. I remember when we were growing at 115 homes a year, plus 25% commercial, plus the grandfathers. And all you could hear was saws in this time, in this town. Those are the days when we used to have fist fights in the CSD meeting. I think we've come a long way. I'm not kidding. I think we've come an incredible long way, and I think that all of you are doing a good job. I think if you can work the details out that she's worried about, so it'll be fair for everybody, I think let's go with it, because it's the best plan that's I can think of. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
As I live and breathe, I never thought we'd get a compliment from Art Van Rijn.
I also remember, Art, that in those days you're talking about, there was one person who came to virtually every one of those meetings, and he had a six-gun with him. And I'm not sure what he intended to use it for, but he threatened.
Okay. I just wanted to, we have talked about this, and I appreciate you bringing it back to the conversation, though, and that is, in all the situations, and Pamela did bring up a very good example, it was very helpful, we have worked so hard looking at buildable sites, accomplishing this balance between open space and the capacity of the desal plant. This is what the funding part is about, to ensure, and I won't use Art's expressions of leaving people out, but we do not intend to have any buildable sites out there without the options that we talked about. It could be that an existing waitlist connection number could be purchased for one of those lots. That's a possibility. It could be that there's a tear-down house and a connection's moved. That's a possibility. But let's say that isn't attainable in this case. Those buildable sites are what we are trying to accumulate this funding for. We do not intend for anyone to ever feel like there was a taking. We do not want anyone to feel we haven't spent a lot of time coming up with a funding source that is not soft money, but real money, because we don't want anyone here that has a building site or relatives or other family in the future to feel that they don't have something that's coming for them. So thank you for bringing that up again.
Thank you, Gail. I have a request for a speaker from C.F. Vuitto. I may have that totally incorrect. Okay. Oh, very good. I apologize. Please state, correct the last name for me, please.
Yeah, I am C.F. Buteau, and I live on Drake Street. And I have a number of questions here. And the first one is, these meters that you're setting up that would be purchased, will those people be able to bill the year they purchase the meter? The second question is, the cost per residence, you're saying, is somewhere $8-$9. Is that going to be prorated on the amount that you use, or will it be $8 or $9 for every resident? The next question is, you're trying to buy about 900 lots, and you're going to spend $30 million, roughly, and all these numbers are. But why do you think you're going to be able to do that? I know as I wander about, I'm down on Marine Terrace, and everyone I look at is $1 million, $2 million. I think one's at $3 million per lot. Then the next question is on the special projects area. I saw where they are, but what makes them special projects? If it's trees and all the trees die, does that now become a buildable lot? I don't understand that. And then the last is on the cost. And I'll mix a couple of things in here, but from what I understood Bob Greshens to say, that when the desal plant is operating, that's going to kick up the water rate. He said it'll cost 50% of what it does now. So that's we've gone up 50. Then there's a cost for building it, I assume bonds or whatever, and that's going to be 10-20%. And then there's going to be whatever the cost is for the residents. So is that going to be $8 an EDU you use, or how does that work? But it seems there's going to be one hell of a growth in the water bill.
Thank you for your comments. Mr. Atto is going to respond to a couple of those.
Thank you for the questions. Here's what I think. I believe that the water connections that would be sold by the land trusts would come with an intent to serve letter. So, and they wouldn't be sold until the moratorium had been lifted. So, but they would come with an intent to serve letter, and I'm seeing nods among the staff there. It's my understanding that the increase water rates would be a fixed amount, not prorated, but.
And it would show up separately on your water bill now as a build-out reduction portion of the fee, not lumped into water and sewer charges.
Regarding which lots would be targeted by the program, I can tell you that I don't think it would make sense for us to go for the most expensive lots. So there are a number of criteria that we've identified that could be used in the selection of lots. Things like the proximity to other open space or retired lots, habitat value, the greatest benefit for the cost. So to try to buy $1 million or $3 million lot would not be the best benefit for the cost.
But there is cost, supply and demand. If you start reducing the lots,
We are aware of that, and I don't feel qualified to speak about how those estimates were made. Perhaps Roger Dale would do that.
We're fortunate to have Jeanette Johnson on our committee, a real estate agent in town that assisted us with getting data about lots that have sold recently in the district, as well as other lots that are currently listed for sale. And most of the more expensive lots The ones that you mentioned with the very high price tags are lots that, first of all, are either have a water meter or are on the water wait list. So those are lots that we have assumed as part of our analysis are ultimately going to be developed and wouldn't be targeted for acquisition. Also, the more expensive lots tend to have views, and we've assumed that if future individuals who get on the water wait list or get a water position at some cost, we're probably going to those future water meters also would tend to gravitate to the larger lots and view lots and more expensive lots. So we're assuming that it's probably going to be the less expensive lots that are left over and available for acquisition. Another distinction to make is that a lot of times a lot is listed as a lot, but it's really a double lot. So the price that we projected is just for the literally for the smaller, as Wayne mentioned, 25 by 70 type lot that's smaller. So it's really kind of a half price for what would normally be thought of as a half lot. Regarding the possibility that of supply and demand forces causing values to go up in the future, we have not directly looked at that. However, we've also not looked at the possibility that the value of the unallocated water positions would also go up as they become more scarce in the future. So that would, as a major funding source of the program, would tend to offset the cost increases that might occur from future inflation and as the program goes along.
Thank you, and I think there were some...
There are lots here in town, too, that are... I'd have to classify them as being non-buildable lots. Now, there really is no such thing. I lived in the valley in Los Angeles, West Valley, for a long time, and I've seen houses built on about an 89-degree slope. You know, they build concrete piers up and toenail the front of the house to the road, and, you've got a buildable lot. And we have a few like that that hopefully they will not build houses like that here. And there are places here where they really cannot be very well built. Any of you that come to CCSD meetings have heard our fire chief talk about some of the roads here that are impassable as far as a fire truck goes. The roads are very narrow, and when you get some cars parked on both sides, and especially have to take a pot shot at builders, they park on both sides of the roads with their big trucks, and there's no way a fire truck can get in there sometimes. And then there are places like, I know all of you are familiar with Nitwit Ridge up here. That road is narrow, and on the side of the road where the Nitwit Ridge house is, it goes straight up this way, and on the other side, it goes straight down that way. And there's no way that you can widen that road. And in fact, it's dangerous now sometimes for something like a fire truck that gets too close to the edge. It's liable to have the whole thing slough off and the fire truck fall off. So there are areas in town here where you really cannot build a house unless you go way beyond the norm for house building. Thank you.
I would like to build upon both Roger and Bill's comments and state that when we were looking at the cost for the lots, I think it was important as part of Roger's research to do a lot of market research and look at averages. While clearly there are some very desirable lots that might be as much as $1 million or $3 million, as Bill indicates, there are also some lots that are severely constrained for building. And so the range of values is extraordinary. While there may be some on the high end that are $3 million, there are also lots that have sold in Cambria for as little as $5,000. So the range is extraordinary here, and I wanted to point that out.
Also, we're talking about lots that are on the list. There's a number of lots that are on the list that are 25 listed on 25-foot lots. Those often, when they come on the market, basically are being sold as the value of the water position, not the value of the property. And so a lot of these larger lots will buy put water positions that are currently sitting on lots that probably have less value than the water position. And those will be moved to some of these larger parcels, as well as they have the possibility of buying the allocations that they've talked about. So,
thank you. And I think the questionnaire had two other areas of concern. One had to do with the special projects area as far as the how do we basically keep that contained, if you will, or what is the actual definition around the special projects areas? And then the second question that I don't think we've responded to yet had to do with the cost of the desal operating costs and how do we ensure we keep a handle around that.
Wayne, I could speak to the cost one. Maybe I wasn't clear enough in the last answer I provided on this, and I'll try to do a better job this time. But our rate study is going to update the numbers. We have old numbers on it that I still have in my head. I'll throw them out there to try to partially answer your question, but it's going to be a qualified answer for that reason. The O&M cost of the desal plant back when Kenny Jinks did their study, which is a couple years old now, was about $710 per acre foot. Now, that didn't use the same more energy-efficient technology that we're looking at right now using our current consultant. But I just did a quick calculation based on the water rate. Say if you use between 7 and 15 units of water, that comes about $2,300 that current ratepayers pay. So it's not 50% more. It's less than half the current rate that people are paying. Now, that has to be analyzed in what the cost is to the customer. The last time that was done was about 5 years ago, so that needs to be updated. When they did that, they assumed less outside grant money for the project, but that rate was over a little over 9% increase in the rates that would occur at that time 5 years ago. So these numbers need to be updated. We're looking at making the plant more efficient and also having more outside funding than what occurred at that time frame. So that's about the best I can go with that until we finish our rate analysis with Black and Veatch's assistance. But it's not going to be a 50% increase. It should be less. And beyond that, it does not the cost of the $2,300 or so per acre foot, that's the current rate, actually goes up in a drought condition. That'd go up 25% in a drought. So with the desalination plant in place, there should not be a drought surcharge in place. So that's. I hope that answers part of your question at least.
And then I think the last component that we have had to do with the special projects
I can offer
area.
A few things on that, Wayne. In 1984, as part of the acquisition program that the Land Conservancy administers for the county, there was a plan prepared by the firm of MJG Incorporated for the benefit of the Coastal Conservancy. That plan identified what they called priority areas number 1 and 2, which were later adapted at the county level and called special projects area number 1 and 2, and they're virtually identical. And the idea behind those were that they looked not only at where important stands of Monterey Pines were, that was certainly one of the components, but we were also looking at factors such as steep slopes. We were looking at circulation and traffic concerns where some of these roads were very small. And in addition, the project areas primarily are unpaved areas, so no curb and gutter there as well. And also, and particularly in the special projects area number 1, which is commonly known as the Fern Canyon area, not only do we have the circulation and traffic elements, the Monterey pine trees, the steep slopes, but we also have riparian quarters at the bottom of that canyon that flow ultimately out to the East Ranch, the Fiscalini Ranch. So it was a suite of factors that were looked at when about 20 years ago the original priority areas for the acquisition program that the Land Conservancy administers was incorporated and adopted. Those also became special project area, and that's my understanding of what the factors were that were considered in those areas.
Thank you, Bob. I have two more comments and questions. First, from Mr. John McKinnon.
Hi. Just I would hope to get some clarification on the commercial water rates. They said it's not on a sliding rule scale, but on here it does say varies depending on use. So that was something she brought up, and so it's contradictory to me. So is that just not right? It's not varying on use, or and I'll ask the question because maybe I'm just not understanding it. It's per EDU, I'm understanding as well. I help manage two businesses that have 12 and 15 EDUs. In talking about, you know, being equitable and fair, when you multiply that out, that's going to be, you know, $400 to $500 a month, which is approximately 50 times what the residential person's going to pay. Those businesses don't use 50 times the amount of water. It seems very inequitable to me, unless I'm understanding this wrong.
That we have Mr. Dale speak to that.
You are correct. It is per EDU, and that amount doesn't vary by type of business. If it's an EDU at a hotel, at a restaurant, or whatever, it's still that amount per EDU. The amounts that were shown on the slide were an estimate of the average cost per account. So that's not a per EDU number. The average commercial account, I think, has something like four or five EDUs. And so the per EDU rate is the same as for residential. It's just that we...
Can you clarify what exactly is... I mean, rather than do an average, just say it's going to be this much per EDU, or, you know...
Well, if you look at the amount that we've shown per residential unit, that's essentially an EDU number. So let me... It's the same. It's just that we wanted to show what that would be for a typical commercial account based on what the average number of EDUs is.
Mm-hmm. Roger, could you explain to the audience what I didn't know in the beginning? What is an EDU, please?
An EDU stands for equivalent dwelling units, and it's what we just talked about, that a household pays that amount per household. And since commercial businesses use varying amounts of water depending on what they are and how large they are charged based on an equivalent amount of water that a household would use. And so on average, a commercial connection in Cambria uses about four to five times the amount of water as an average household, or four to five EDUs, or equivalent dwelling units. So we've applied that same... 881 a month and multiplied it by the typical number of EDUs that a commercial account has, and that's how we came up with that estimate of $39.40 per month. But again, that's just an estimate based on the typical number of EDUs at a commercial account.
Okay. Thank
you. Yes, and thank you for that question, because you're right. It wasn't as clear in our presentation, and we'll come up with a different way of presenting that so it is clear. Thank you. I have one remaining workshop comment, and I'll read it. Request exemption for visitor-serving properties from surcharge. The Coastal Commission encourages visitor-serving, and it's not fair not to share huge costs with the existing visitor-serving properties. One motel project could cost an additional $500,000 due to the high surcharge. If shared with all existing motels, the overall charge per room would be insignificant. Existing motels would not have an unfair advantage. The excessive costs might motivate a change of zoning to the detriment of tax base and the overall benefits of visitor serving to Cambria. And this is from Mr. John Swift. Is Mr. Swift in the audience? The reason I'm asking is I'd like a little more amplification on the question. But does anyone have a response?
No, I guess I'm considering it a comment because I didn't quite follow it at the end. But I'm assuming he's talking about the surcharges that we had in effect when there is water conservation measures needed, because I didn't see surcharges in the program presentation, obviously. So I wrote down exemption for visitor serving surcharge. I put a question mark. Maybe that's something we consider as we meet again.
Yes, and we have the comment recorded here, so we will definitely look into it. Mr. Hawley.
I've got two more questions if you have time.
Absolutely. In fact, we're going to open it up after this to any additional questions. I'm out of my speaker requests here, but if you have any additional questions, feel free to come to the podium.
Just two questions for the time being. One is the 1% growth cap. Now, that 1% growth cap can be changed in literally a heartbeat with one vote by one of the county board of supervisors. Instead of a 3-2, it could be a 3-2 the other way, and we could be that whole scenario can change, which will change the numbers on how this lot reduction program works. Matter of fact, the whole growth cap can be lifted in a heartbeat. We could have 300 houses built here in a year, perhaps. Although I think the Coastal Commission has limited it to 125, which is still a huge amount of growth. So have you considered what might happen with that? And the second question is the urban growth boundary. And I noticed there was a question in there, but it doesn't quite answer the part of the question that I'm going to be asking. I think this community can put a urban growth boundary around it, which limits the CCSD, and I'm not saying this CCSD, I'm saying a future CCSD, to annex property to our community to break this growth cap. And I think this front-end loading of this urban growth boundary needs to be done immediately in order to get further buy-in with this lot reduction program. That doesn't preclude the county from placing a Walmart on our border because we have no control over that, but we do have control of how we allocate our water outside of the county. So the UGB would be to stop annexation for 25 years, and it would prohibit the CCSD from delivering water outside of the current urban reserve line, and that would include expansion to any state park facility that wants to expand campgrounds. And I understand that the state park is probably the biggest user of water in our community, and I also understand that they don't have hardly any water saving devices. They don't conserve water like we do.
Thank you for your comment. I know there's been a lot of discussion regarding the urban growth boundary, and if it's all right, I'll ask Mr. Montandon to articulate that.
Would you like me to try to respond to the first question also?
Yes, of course.
Okay. The question, I believe, was what would happen if the county repealed its growth control ordinance to our lot reduction program? First, if our lot reduction program was in place, the total amount of water available would still remain at the 4,650 service cap. But a better answer to that, I believe, when we go through the process of obtaining a permit for the construction of desalinization, that permit would be approved by the county and the Coastal Commission. That approval more than likely will contain a condition in it that we have to comply with this particular plan, the build-out reduction plan. They can build in, and we can ask for a program in there that it be allocated over the same period of time which we project today. So in other words, as a condition of the approval of the desal plant, we have to retire a certain number of lots for each unit that of water that we provide, and that we could only provide a certain amount of water per year. So I guess the answer to the question is that if they repeal the ordinance, we would still be subject to the permit granted by the county and the Coastal Commission, which would be in place and enforceable by any member of the public. We specifically built this in, as shown on the overheads, as a mitigation monitor, a mitigation that is monitored. What that means is public members of the public would have a right to bring a lawsuit to require us to follow the plan, and it could be enforced regardless of who's elected to the Board of Supervisors, regardless of who's elected to the CCSD board. The power would be back in the citizenry to enforce this in the future. The other issue in which I've been wrestling with some legal research is the direction by the board to provide an ordinance that could be voted on by the citizens or the electorate of Cambria, which would limit the ability for the district to provide water outside its current boundaries, either for outside utility water users or for annexation. That type of the ordinance that has been asked for is an ordinance that would require a vote. In other words, if we were going to have a Walmart outside our boundaries, which we could provide water for, then we would have to go to the electorate and have an election to do that. We obviously, if that was a requirement, require the developer to pay for that. Then the citizens could decide whether they wanted Walmart next door or not. We have an absolute discretion at our level to say yay or nay to that type of outside utility user agreements set forth in statute and approved by case law. The other factual scenario is whether somebody would like to annex into the district, and that's the portion that I'm still wrestling with. I believe I have a legal way of approaching that. The net effect would be the same, that to allow an annexation to require a vote of the electorate of the citizens of the Cambria Community Services District. Without that majority vote, no property could be annexed because they would be without water. So we could basically, as citizens and voters, control the destiny of this community as far as water use outside our current boundaries.
Thank you, Mr. Montandon. Now, again, I don't have any additional comment forms, and I don't want to skip anyone who may have filled one out, and for some reason I have skipped it. Does anybody else wish to speak? Please come to the...
Good evening. I'm Garth Kornreich. Just had a couple questions I hope you can clarify. Hate to put you on the spot on deadlines or whatever, but I just wondered if you had any estimate on if the desal plant is built, when it would be built, when you would start releasing water wait list connections, and how many per year you would release.
Those are great questions. Go ahead, Bob.
Well, the difficult part of that is predicting permitting. And I'm going to say 4 years has been my standard answer on that question for a while. And I'll stick to my 4 years. I didn't know it would take a year to try to get the soil borings done to do our geotechnical investigation. So we're approaching 1 year on that process. So I'm going to say 4 years. But once again, it's subject to a fairly substantial permitting process, an environmental clearance process that could add to that time. But that seems reasonable to me right at this point.
Thank you. Are there any other questions? Yes, please.
Wayne, I don't know if we answered all of his question.
I apologize.
When the desalinization plan is substantially on its way to be constructed, the board can consider and lift the moratorium. It doesn't have to be lifted all at once. They can allow a certain number through at the beginning, and each year allow a certain number more. We are subject to whatever county ordinance in effect at that time. Currently, I believe the ordinance allows an accumulation of a certain number of allocations over the years that haven't been given out for Cambria, and I believe that number is at 100 or 120. They could change that by the time the moratorium is lifted. As the ordinance is currently lifted, is written at the county level, that 100 accumulation expires in 2007. So we don't know until we get to that time what the ordinance will allow, but we're subject to the growth limitations of that ordinance whenever we have the water available to allocate. So if we want to allocate 100 and they only allow 25, that's, we're subject to the 25.
Thank you. Another comment.
Jerry Farrell. I'm also concerned about the state park water use, and I'd like to know what amount of water do they actually use? Are they subject to the same fines we are as residents? And are there any restrictions on the water use? Or do we just provide water to them because we're friendly and neighborly? And they're the state.
That's a very good question. We do supply water to them, and currently they would fall under the same surcharges if they were in place. There are obvious reasons why we want to cooperate with state parks with regard to our desal plant location. So we do try to befriend them in that way, but we are working closely with them. We went out to make sure that they were retrofitted with regard to their fixtures, and we are going to look at them during the financial management plan analysis to make sure that if there's going to be a visitor serving rate potential structure put in place, that they would be considered as part of that.
And I have a question. Is it true, as Mr. Hawley said, that they do use a significant share of our water resources? Do we have any numbers on that? Just curious.
I'm sorry that I don't have the consumption. Sure. We can maybe provide you with an answer because I don't know their exact consumption right off the top of my head.
May I ask a question?
I was just going to answer your question. Hi, my name's Corey, and I'm part of the admin staff for the CCSD. One of the things that we have discussed in previous board meetings is our conservation requirements and our best management practices. There's three big ones that we're working on this year, and large landscape areas happens to be one of them. And that's one of the biggest, the campground is one of the biggest concerns for us, and it is something that we're working on currently.
Thank you, Corey.
And I'd like to add, Mr. Chairman, that one of the complications we have dealing with the state park is an agreement that predated staff that's here today, and that agreement allows them to have water outside the district in exchange for the district having a water pipeline that runs through their park. And the pipeline is the main pipeline the district has to service the San Simeon Wells and would be the main pipeline for the desalinization plant, too.
Thank you.
You may have answered this question, and it may be that I just didn't understand it. By the way, I'm Jim Crescenzi. But let's say you have a water position. You own a lot, and it has a water meter allocated to it, and it's number 500 on the list. How many years would you roughly estimate before that person, in fact, could use it?
Well, I think in the past, Jim, I think yeah. It was, it largely depends as the allocations are open as to who is ready to build at that time. You may be 500 on the list, but there may be a lot of them lower than you that are not ready to build, and if you were in a position to build, you might be able to get one of the first ones out of the pocket.
the reason I'm it's more dynamic than that, because the value of the water meter as it starts to be near being buildable increases a great deal, so someone wouldn't pass that up necessarily, and so I guess I still don't feel I have an answer.
Okay, we're going to give you a guesstimate. We just calculated about 19 years. 2025.
Thank you.
We are here with answers tonight. If you're number 500.
Before we lose all of our audience here, I want to make a comment. Before we started, I said that I thought we had a good plan here, and that it would be, you know, pretty well received by most of you. I still think we have a good plan here. I did not say it was a perfect plan, and it isn't a perfect plan. And this is a far different plan than what we started with several months ago. We have met every Wednesday since about the first of the year, anywhere from 3 to 5 hours. And, you know, some particular item would come up, and we might have anywhere from 1 to 9 people that supported that particular viewpoint at the moment. But we kept bouncing things back and forth against each other, and we finally come to a consensus of opinion that this is the best answer we've got to that question. And I want to thank all of you that have been here tonight, because bouncing your questions and comments off of us gives us the motive to make this, again, not a perfect plan, but a better plan. So we thank you all for what you have brought to us.
Thank you, Bill. Wayne?
And if we still are open
for questions if anybody wants to ask more questions. But I wanted to say that I've been keeping track of the questions, and we will write down the question, find an answer, and add it to our list of frequently asked questions, and that'll be posted on the website and available in, I guess, in other meetings. So we will update the program in response to your questions. I did want to say one other thing before we open the podium back. This was the first time I've worked with three of the CCSD staff in this committee, and I want to say that I'm very impressed with the professionalism of Tammy Ruddock, Art Montandon, Bob Gressens, and Connie Davidson, and I appreciate their forthrightness and their clear interest in doing this right.
I echo those comments, and I'd like to open it back up for anyone who has any additional comment or questions. Yes, please.
My name is Mahala Burton. On the last question about the wait list, as I recall, there was a change made to the wait list. Originally, if you were number one on the wait list and you were offered an opportunity to build and you said no, you stayed there. Then it went to number two. I thought it changed so that if you were given an opportunity to build and you said no, you went to the bottom.
You know, we have not worked out those details, Mickey. I'm sorry? Right. I'm sorry. I'm going to let Art.
You know, part of the problem with staff is a lot of us weren't here when we actually gave out water, so we don't have a real-life experience. But we've amended the ordinance. We haven't applied it because we haven't allocated water, but we call it the one-strike law, that when the wait list is opened, you will be given one opportunity within which to accept a can and will serve letter. If you choose to pass that year, you're given an opportunity the next year, and you don't take it the second time, you're put at the back of the list.
Okay, so it's two, okay. I am not on the wait list. I own one lot, and I live there. When you originally we started this, Wayne Ryburn made the statement that he lived on one lot. So no one else said anything. So I'm wondering what the position is. Do any of you own multiple lots, one lot, two lot on the wait list, the dry list, the unbuildable lots? And if you, it's been brought up that there's conflict of interest if you do. It's been circulated in an email. Many of you may have received it. Walter Osborne wrote it. I don't know who Walter is.
And Mr. Chairman, I can respond to that. I got a copy of that, I believe, today or late yesterday. And we looked at the possibility if there was a problem like this when this committee was formed. But this committee is a committee of constituents. It was purposely put together to have people of all viewpoints representing different agencies, possibly in different constituencies and stakeholders in the community. So having people with different vacant lots and representing people that had interest in vacant lots was exactly what we wanted. This step with the committee is the first step of the very public process the board wanted to engage in. They are members of the public to look at this and preview it and study it in detail. Their input is only recommendations. They don't make the final decision. Their input is just like yours. It's a concerned member of the public into this. The final decisions we made by the board after many more hearings on the environmental document. So it's been my determination from the very beginning that there is no conflict. And anyone who has a concern about that, I'll be happy to talk to them and discuss it in detail, that they are members of the public that are helping us get input into doing this correctly.
Yes, I understand that. But then it should just be disclosed because people are interested. Decisions are made, and there's a lot of money involved. And it's going to come out sooner or later, so just put your cards on the table. That's all I'm asking. Thank you.
And I'm not stopping them from doing that. I'm just saying that we looked at it at the time.
Yes, and to answer your question directly, as I think I indicated when I opened the meeting and my background, I do have a lot on Happy Hill, along with my wife, and it is on the water wait list. So I have one lot that's on the water wait list.
Thank you. I live outside the district, and I don't own any property in the district.
I don't mean it to be an inquisition.
That's okay. I have, at one time or another, owned four different properties, but at the moment I have one property with one house on it, and that's more than I can afford.
Again, my name's Bob Hill. Like Wayne, I also do not live in the district, and I wanted to start with that point in and of itself and to sort of indicate some of the dynamics of our own working group. Wayne and I actually talked when we first started about, well, geez, we don't actually live in the district and therefore aren't really affected here, and so why should we have a say in what does affect others who do live in the district? And I think the answer to that is that we were asked to participate because of our experience and because of our understanding of how these things work. You know, like I said, I've been managing a lot acquisition program for 5 years now. I've done a lot of it. And so I provided a lot of input in that regard, yet within those meetings was often silent and deferred on situations when we were sort of raising our hands, who thinks this is fair or who thinks that's fair. Additionally, another component here, I participated in the group as an individual, but you know, for me, when you hear people say, well, geez, I'm wearing this hat now and I'm wearing this hat then, that doesn't really fly with me a lot of times. And so I want to also speak on behalf of my organization, the Land Conservancy of San Luis Obispo County. And in here it also indicates, and this is very clear, that you know, unallocated positions would be issued to local land trusts that are not specifically named here. There are several local land trusts working in Cambria, of which mine is one, and of which Green Space is another. We also have North Coast Swap here and other land trusts working in our area. And so one might wonder, well, geez, you know, clearly I'm working here to position my organization to be one of those that receives, you know, meters and would therefore have work to do and profit by doing that. I wanted to state, you know, clearly that, first of all, no negotiations or any approach has been made to myself or my organization by the CCSD to discuss having how that might work or whether we would be approved to do that or anything like that. So that discussion has not happened whatsoever. And furthermore, even if it were to have happened, it would require an action of my board of trustees to engage in such a project. And my board of trustees has also had no such conversation. So we're just not there yet. That's my disclosure.
As a matter of disclosure, I at the present time own one piece of property, and that's where I live.
My wife and I live on one piece of property. We purchased in 1975, thank heavens, and that's basically where we're from. I might also reiterate as to the different political ideologies that we have on our board, many different sides of and visions of Cambria. I made the joke in the beginning week that 10 or 15 years ago, we'd probably be throwing rocks at each other from one side of the fence to the other. But I think times are changing in Cambria, and it's time that we come together and hope that Cambria can come together as well as we have on this board. Thank you.
I own a property here, as I mentioned. I live in this community, and I also am on the wait list. And when I started on the wait list, I did not have silver hair. I don't think just being on the wait list has been the only factor in that. But I will say that we have worked very hard to ensure open space in this community. and I don't want people to become divisive. There's a little undercurrent about the wait list maybe tainting this process. But as kind of an amusement to me, since now, if I live long enough to build, I have also just increased my ability to build here on the fees I would already pay by over $10,000. That's a very good commitment to our community. Thank you for asking.
I want to thank Mickey for asking for disclosure, because the email that's been referred to that some of you may have not seen implies that this committee was loaded with UNLOC members who had vested interests, and that's very far from the truth. I can assure you that is not the case. Thank you.
It's good to get it out in the open, so thank you.
Thank God it's out in the open.
This gentleman back there.
Thank you. We have one more speaker.
Yeah, my name's Lee Keltner. I'm on the lot here. I want to go back to what the lady here said. Are you changing that rule that, say, you were number one, and then if you don't build in 2 years, you go to the bottom of the list?
That rule has already been changed.
It has been changed?
Yes, a year or two ago, I believe, that's what I remember.
You know, that's very unfair. The person who gets there, you know, you force him to build, he may not have the money. What's he going to do, dump the lot?
It will only...
Huh? Let me
encourage you to do this. I mean, it really will not be enforced for some number of years when we start releasing water intent to serve letters. You certainly can petition your board and ask that they change or modify our hardship provision be added to it before then. And that's what I suggest you do. When we had the hearing on the ordinance, not very many people spoke, frankly. But we can change it if there's enough people who would like to have it changed.
You know, what's the evil in letting the guy, say he's number one, sit there? You just go deeper in the pattern. If he never builds, you might as well have been number 1,000. You know, what difference does it make?
I'm only the scribe in this, but I remember the hearing that the people who spoke for this felt that there were people speculating by holding these low number positions for a number of years in an attempt to get the most money for it. And that was, I think, the evil they hoped to cure, plus the administration problem of doing it. And as I said, if you feel that somehow that's unfair or affects you unfairly, you can certainly send us a letter or contact the board members and ask that they consider an amendment to provide a hardship exemption for that.
Well, I don't agree with that, but anyway, if that's what it is, it's what it is. But I think I saw nothing with the old rule. You know, these people paid their money long ago, and there for a while we were getting interest, and then that knocked off. But anyway, as you move deeper in the pattern, it's a number. That's all it is. It's a number. And forcing him to build, why? And he's speculating, so what?
I understand.
That's life. Some build, some don't. Okay, thank you.
Thank you for your comments.
Was it a few years ago that we considered taking in outside interest into our CCSD so that we could take their water rights? Wasn't that the ranchers nearby?
I don't understand your question.
Well, I think you do. In other words, weren't the ranchers nearby sued? What was the situation? I saw a whole bunch of people out here with horses and et cetera a few years ago. And what was the situation there? I realize you don't want to take any Walmart property into the group here, but would you take in property that had some water?
Oh, for purposes of adding water to them?
Mm-hmm.
Let's say we condemned property up one of the creeks in an attempt to get their water rights. Our water permits with the state only allow us to extract a certain amount of water from each creek aquifer. So even if we own more water, more land, and more wells, we couldn't extract any more water.
Mm-hmm.
So we wouldn't do that.
Yeah. Well, the way I kind of look at Cambria is like a big game of Monopoly. Started back, in the 20s and 30s, and they
few people wanted to make a few bucks on turning over some postage size little stamps of property. And a lot of people bought up this property from the valley, etc. And now today we have all these lot owners who no way in hell could ever afford to build here. And I feel sorry for them. The sad part is that our kids, our grandkids, in my estimation, will never be. This is a dying group to me. You know, I'll be 67 next month, and I have two lots. I will probably never be able to build on them. But I hear of people like this lady right here talking about how many years she's been sitting on her property, and to me, it's a game of Monopoly. It's sad, but it's very, very true. And I really suffer. My heart suffers for the young people here. Okay? They'll never be able to afford anything here. It's, you know, it's sad, but true. And that's all I really have to say.
Can you give your name?
My name is Kurt Rohn.
Thank you for your comments.
Thank you.
Thank you. Miss Lynn King.
Yes, my name is Lynn Keene. I'm a homeowner in Canberra. Also have been a lot owner and involved in vacation rental. So that probably covers just about everything. With regard to the request for disclosure for the committee, with all due respect, I think Council made it quite clear that this is a non-voting entity. CCSD will make the final decisions on that. I hope I'm not alone, and I feel confident that I'm not, that this committee has proven to me their singular focus and dedication on coming up with a solution. I did not detect anyone pushing any kind of a personal agenda, and frankly, I think they were well represented for diversification as well as their expertise. And it doesn't matter to me whether they live here, don't live here, own whatever. I think that their drive and purpose is to help all of us, and I think they've done a wonderful job.
Thank you. We have another speaker. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Amanda Rice, and I am a new homeowner in town, but I've lived here about 5 years. And my question is for people who aren't here and people who didn't hear about this meeting and people who all of a sudden hear about it from their neighbors, where can they get information and how do you guys plan to inform the community besides just using this kind of forum, which is important kind of forum, but how else do, I mean, is there phone numbers or how else do you plan on doing that?
Yes, thank you for that. And a couple of responses, and then again, I'll open it up for some additional comment. One is, and probably the best way, is if they can get on the internet and go to www.cambriacsd.org. All of the documentation that we have here today, the full reports, the Q&A, even copies of the PowerPoint presentation are available there. And again, that's a good place to go because as we make changes to the documentation, that information is replicated there. Also, the intent, and while we haven't set necessarily a time and date exactly to do it, but the intent is after this meeting, after we gather some of the comments, information, into our report, we do want to send a letter and documentation reports out to lot owners that might be affected by the program.
And what about the, I noticed that there's videotaping going on. Is this going to be available at the library, or are you going to let people know that something's going to be available to them?
It'll
to
be televised as usual board meetings, and they will have a tape at the district office. So
okay. And some people like me, I only have satellites, so right. I don't have local
TV. They can
TV,
purchase
so.
It. Mm-hmm. And, okay. And to add on to Wayne's comments, we will be sending out probably an informational brochure in the water bills. We use that as a good forum. Our newsletter will probably address some of these issues. And then I left some business cards on the table if they're still there. Otherwise, I'm Tammy Rudock. I'm the one who you send the information to on the website. My email address is T-R-U-D-O-C-K, just like it sounds, at CambriaCSD.org. It's in your handout. I'm very approachable. My staff knows my email. And then it's the intent, if you just do it with me, it doesn't mean everything's going to bottleneck at me. I can get the information out to the committee for response. Mm.
Okay, thank you.
Do you have cable television, Amanda?
I have satellite.
Satellite. Yeah. For those who have cable, it's on 21, Charter Cable, Channel 21.
Otherwise, it's available at the district? Okay, thank you.
We would be available, some of us, to talk with service clubs or any other groups in the community. Just send those requests. You won't get all of us, probably, but some of us would be happy to talk with you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We have another speaker. Thank you.
Just to add on to that, this can be purchased through AGP Video. Our phone number is 805-772-2715, or you can go to our website, www.calspan.org. So it can be there.
Thank you. Are there any other comments? Yes, please. Jerry?
Thank you. Jerry McKinnon once again. No diatribe this time, just a couple of questions. Question number one for our attorney. You want to attach a certain number of dollars to our water bill. The water bill, I thought, was to feed an enterprise fund. And the money in an enterprise fund is supposed to go to water. Is it true that this money would go to purchase lots? Is that can an enterprise fund be expanded to something like that? And the second question, why not put this to a public vote and find out really how the community feels about the process? Because as it stands now, it's people who want something badly enough that they're willing to do anything to get it. And there are some out on the outside just are saying, well, let's just wait and see what happens, and now here we are. So what's the chances of putting the whole process to a vote, and what about the tax on the water bill?
First of all, the term enterprise fund comes from legislation, state legislation from the 40s, and is commonly used in governmental budgeting, but it's not an appropriate use of it if you look at the statute. The constraint that exists in state law is Proposition 218 regarding the use of water rates for water purposes. As I stated in the beginning, the lot reduction program is part of the environmental document that becomes the approval for the desalinization plant. In other words, it's part and parcel of the water project. It's not unlike any of the other environmental mitigations that we have to comply with our other projects, including tree mitigations, replanting, landscaping, a number of other things. We have to address growth-inducing impacts, so it becomes part of that project and therefore part of the water project. That was the initial premise we looked at before we went on this mission to try to develop this program and spend the dollars to get there. The other issue regarding whether this should go to a vote, first of all, there's no legal requirement that it go to a vote. That is a decision the board can make. I think that part of this issue had already been gone to a vote, if I understand correctly, and that issue is what the total size of the desalinization plant should be. I understand that had been voted on before, if I'm correct. And August 2000, that it'd be 4650, so that already has been spoken to and voted upon. So our goal, I think, part of it was to listen to that vote and develop a project that would accomplish exactly what the voters wanted.
Jerry should recall that vote on desal because it involved not only people living here as registered voters, but anybody who owned a lot in Cambria. They might live in Bakersfield, Fresno, Memphis, Tennessee, whatever, and everybody voted overwhelmingly, as I recall at that time, that they wanted a desal plant as a new water source, And the build-out reduction program that you've talked about this evening simply facilitates that desal plant. So I think you'll recall it in that regard, Jerry, I hope.
Thank you. Another comment, please.
There have been comments about the narrow streets being a problem for safety. I've been concerned about that for a long time because I live near Shamel Park, and every year cars are parked so that a fire truck could not get through the street. I don't understand why the 15-foot easement is not enforced in building here, because if it were, the streets would be perfectly safe. I know that up on the hill you were talking about, that's not possible, but almost all places it is. And yet people build fences, rock walls, plant trees, right out to the street on both sides. Why is that?
I'm going to ask if it's all right if Chief Putney, is Chief Putney still? Could you speak to that, Chief?
Well, if we're going to be honest about why that occurs, it's because the county allows it to occur. The county does not enforce the fire code. The county does not hold people accountable that they cannot block public ingress or egress. And so we constantly battle with the street road department and the planning department and the building department to try to keep roads as wide as possible. The fire code makes them 20 feet wide for a reason, and that's so people can get in and out during an emergency. So that's the short answer to the question, is because the county allows it. They don't do anything about it.
Thank you. Are there any other comments? Our group is dwindling, and I see people nodding off. I see none. We thank you, each and every one, for attending and for all of your comments, for all of your questions. We will take all of this input and turn it around into our report. And again, that information will be on the website and contained in all of our future updates. Thank you so much for attending.